Hey, Hannah.
Hey, Dante.
Aren't you excited for the second episode of I'm Living Proof?
Yes, I am so excited to say that today we are sharing Lauren's story. Lauren is a young adult council member, and she titled her episode, I'm Living Proof, Bipolar Does Not Define Me.
And bipolar certainly doesn't define Lauren. We're going to go on a journey with her where Lauren is going to touch on changes that happened in her personal life while she was experiencing bipolar for the first time. So she's going to talk about her changes in her family, graduating school, and the transition into young adulthood as well.
Yeah, I think she covers a lot of important topics in the letter, and I think a lot of people will connect with her experience. So I'm excited to share this with everyone.
Yeah, I think this is going to be very important for anybody going through a big challenge in their life right now. Lauren's story is very, very insightful.
Yeah, so let's turn it over and hear it from Lauren.
Dear Lauren, what an emotional roller coaster you have been on. Everything feels amplified, and it's like you're no longer in the driver's seat. But you're also wondering if these are just growing pains, and that you're becoming a new and better version of yourself. You aren't entirely wrong about that. You've felt excited and emboldened by how outspoken you've become. Not like the quiet, shy person you felt insecure about being. It feels like this is your time. That you are breaking out of your shell, that this is your awakening. And no one seems to be understanding that. I hear you, I see you. But remember that you are not someone who cuts people down with your words. You're absolutely allowed to feel angry. However, this intense rage is different from what you have experienced. I know you want to speak up like you haven't been able to before. You will learn to temper your words and how to advocate for yourself. But you know too that you've burned others with your fire. Also, you have come to experience, unfortunately, what goes up must come down. And you have crashed hard. It does feel awful to not only lose a spark of energy and excitement that hypomania brought, but also to fall into the depths of depression that made it difficult to bring yourself out of bed for those summer classes and respond to friends trying to make plans. Soon after these episodes, you almost wanted to give up on therapy and medication, especially after going to the emergency room from the side effects of one and having that experience be doubted by the psychiatrist, as well as having to start over again with new therapists. Knowing this, I am even more proud of you for pushing yourself to continue looking up providers when you move back home, given how incredibly frustrating it was to learn how to navigate insurance on your own. Although it made your early experiences with treatment more difficult, I can understand being afraid to include our parents in the process and have those conversations about your mental health, which it continues to be at times. But you did find the treatment team for yourself. They showed how consistent therapy and the right medications truly make a difference. They showed what quality mental health providers can look like, inspiring you to aim to bring that same level of care into your own practice as a therapist. I know you will never forget how it felt to be shamed by the pharmacy tech for being in tears over how much medication costed, not understanding what insurance information was needed to bring that cost down. Lauren, you have so much to look forward to as you work towards getting yourself healthy again. 4 years later, you will get into graduate school for a doctorate in clinical psychology, and you will persevere through the challenges that are going to be thrown at you. Yet I would strongly encourage you to get your new treatment team set up as you transition into a new city, like you were advised, rather than waiting almost a year later when you're in absolute crisis. You will find your people as you work to seek out a community for yourself while holding on to the steadfast relationships with people who will be your life raft amidst the emotional storms brought on by mood episodes. You will meet your lifelong partner who accepts you unconditionally and supports you endlessly. Also, as much as the hypomania tries to convince you, you do not need to start the world's biggest collection of candles and mugs to be special. As for the question of whether your newfound voice is explained by your personality or your disorder, take heart that you will discover other aspects of yourself as you remain open to change and strive to always learn. Part of this journey does involve growing pains, but you will become more and more comfortable with yourself. Remember that for you, bipolar disorder is something that you have, not something you are. And you will continue to learn to live with it, not be defined by it. With much love, future Lauren.
Thank you for sharing your story with us, Lauren. We really appreciate that. Now, our audience will appreciate having heard your story as well. What was the experience like writing this story to your younger self?
Yeah, I felt like this was a really, obviously, reflective experience, but I felt such a tenderness towards my younger self that I wanted to take care in making sure I was expressing in this letter. I felt like thinking back on that time when I was going through all those emotions, like how much of an emotional roller coaster it was for me. I remembered how alone I felt in all of that and how confusing it all felt. I was very overwhelmed by all of it. And in writing this letter, I wanted to convey not only that, or what I would have wanted to have heard back when I was younger, like not only to be heard and seen, understood, but just to be told that things will get better, that I do have much to look forward to. Like, I wanted to ultimately end it on a hopeful note for sure.
Yeah, I think you did, especially the part where you talk about living with bipolar, but that not be who you are. At around what age were you starting to experience the first symptoms of bipolar?
Yeah, so that was towards the end of my last year in college. So I was about 21, 22.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. 22 years old.
You start getting these onset of feelings, and I've worked with you for the past 2 years now. I've worked with mm-hmm. you for the past 2 years. So when I was reading your letter and listening to you talk, you talked about these feelings of anger, like this onset, and that it's definitely not a word I would use to describe you in our interaction. So how was that for you, feeling though, particularly anger for the first time?
Yeah, I think at the time it was so viscerally felt by me. I had been frustrated, angry, of course, before, but not to the level or extent that I was physically feeling that emotion, that rage, I would call it. Especially growing up in my household that I did as a Asian American woman who was sent messages that it's not okay to express her emotions, it's not okay to cry, it's not okay to be so open about these feelings. So it was all very unfamiliar and I didn't know what to do with them. Especially the anger. It was just like seeing red a lot of the time. I was hurt, I was confused, and I was just lashing out at whoever I felt like was doing an injustice to me, who wasn't listening to me, whether that was close family and friends or just people. You know, out in public.
I am curious to know, how did these new emotions, this new, like you said, this visceral reaction, how did that start to affect your like interpersonal relationships?
Oh, it very much eroded, especially my romantic relationship at the time. I was still together with my high school boyfriend who mm-hmm. We went to the same college and we had been together all throughout college, not without its bumps in the road and its own challenges. But I think experiencing the bipolar symptoms really drove the nail in the coffin, unfortunately, for me and that relationship. I think he wasn't used to seeing me so outspoken, first of all, or so angry, first of all, and then so verbal and how angry I was feeling. And so that definitely took him aback, and he wasn't sure what to do with any of it. I made him cry. I hurt him deeply, for sure, and I felt badly about that. To this day, I've never felt like I've been able to resolve that with him, unfortunately. But yeah, ultimately that relationship dissolved, I think, in large part because of those symptoms and that rage that I was expressing towards him and everyone. And it definitely caused a further rift in my relationship with my dad when I moved back home. Mm-hmm. After college, I wasn't medicated, I wasn't fully set up with my treatment team like I described in the letter. I was still trying to figure that all out when I moved back home. And so I got into a lot of conflicts with my dad, which I already had a tenuous, complicated relationship with him. And I think these feelings and the rage just even further exacerbated that with him, unfortunately.
You talked about this setting up a treatment team, kind of like the start of the turning point in your letter, is navigating these systems. But you were navigating our mental health system, our healthcare system, and trying to navigate your last years of college at the same time. Can you walk us through that? Like, what was that experience like?
Yeah, looking back, I have wondered what it was that really triggered the onset of these bipolar symptoms. And mm-hmm. part of me does think the end of college was a part of that, like the prospect of leaving this structured time and space that I had been in for 4 years and not knowing what I wanted to do actually after college, like having one foot in and out the door of pursuing medical school or not, and just feeling real confused about all of that. So that was difficult. And I was fortunate that I was experiencing these symptoms first while still in college, so I could utilize the college counseling center for free. I had a number of initial sessions that were covered being a student, and so that was helpful to get me started. But yeah, I did have to transition out at some point, and did have to then navigate my way through the community while I was still in the area around my college and when I moved back home. And I was told and instructed, use my insurance network, like look up who are the in-network providers, and that'll get me on the right track. And I found that honestly to be frustrating, because either the list on the insurance portal wasn't up to date, so people weren't accepting new clients, or some of them never even got back to me, or there was a long wait list to be seen as a new client. So both for therapy and for medication management. So it was, it was stressful, to say the least.
Our healthcare system is complicated on its own. And then you're taking on our healthcare system and trying to manage your symptoms for the first time. There's no way I know myself as a 21 or 22 year old could have gotten through that. I still to this day have an issue with figuring out who accepts my dental insurance, right? And so if you're trying to get through finding the right doctor, finding the right psychologist, all of that, I commend you. We talked about this before in our other podcast about navigating the healthcare system, and I'm so grateful that you're willing to share your experience there. You talked a little bit about this experiencing the symptoms of bipolar and also expressing yourself for the first time. Is there a difference between experiencing this and finding, you're ending college, right? So we all find ourselves, but were you worried that your quote-unquote finding yourself were just the symptoms of bipolar?
Yeah, absolutely. As much as I have a stronger sense of myself now and the distinction between me, my personality, and the disorder, that was such a huge question in my mind in those earlier years of wondering, yeah, how much of this is the hypomania, how much of this is actually me going through growing pains, becoming a new, better version of myself, especially when I got such a backlash from my boyfriend at the time and my dad of understandably, you know, being shocked and taken aback by how verbally aggressive I was being towards them. But in trying to find my voice and trying to express myself, it was all so new and different and unfamiliar. So I was trying to parse that out of, you know, is this just me trying to exercise my voice? And what is actually like, not necessarily pathological, but just like what is problematic about it?
Well, and we would be doing a disservice if we didn't talk about your culture in this as well. How did that affect, obviously your family, but just the perception of maybe mental health in your community?
Yeah, in terms of my family, again, specifically in my relationship with my dad, he, you know, viewed me very much as someone who was respectful, obedient, quiet, never talked back really at all. And what I say next, I say like tentatively, because I still don't really know his side of that whole experience. Like, I want to further process and rehash that time with him, but it is difficult to one, bring that back up at all, and two, just to have conversations like that with him, just given our relationship. But I do feel like he held these quote unquote traditional Asian values of like him being the head of household. Like, he is the authority figure, he as the father and male in our family, like me as his daughter should be respectful unconditionally, like without question. And a lot of the conflict came from me feeling like, you know, he's demanding my respect just based on gender and family roles. My respect needs to be earned. He can't just demand this of me. And in the broader community, that's harder for me to say, to reflect back on at that time, because my sense of cultural identities as like the intersectionality between like me being Asian, being Asian American, being a woman, second generation, that all wasn't very salient to me at the time, and not until very recently. And I do think, though, that there were these implicit messages that I had internalized that made it difficult to talk to, like, my peers, many of whom are Asian American, like, especially at my college campus, there's many of us there in the community. And so I felt like, and to this day, you know, there is so much stigma still surrounding mental health in the Asian American community, and it is difficult for people to talk about this with peers and with family. So I do think that was still very much part of my experience back then, as maybe not as aware as I was about it then.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of our growth, and how different cultures handle mental health is something that, you know, DBSA is starting to explore itself. Switching gears a little bit, it's something that struck me in your letter is that we learned you did not need to start the largest mug or candle collection. This does get me to
A question about your creativity. I know you as a very creative person because you come up with great ideas during our young adult council meetings. Similar to finding your voice, do you ever worry that your creativity and your symptoms of hypomania are intertwined, or are they intertwined? Is it something you identify with?
Yeah, that's a great question and something I still reflect on often for myself because, like, I don't have the exact research statistics off the top of my head, but I do feel like I've read there is an association with creativity and hypomania, or mania rather, in people with bipolar disorder. Like, something about the mania just really frees up and opens that, I don't know, those like networks, or like allows for freer associations to be made. Like, thinking back on that time, like when I was trying to think of ideas for like a blog, a self-help or lifestyle blog that I wanted to launch, like idea after idea came to me. It was like I came up with, I don't know, 60 plus topic ideas in one night, honestly. And wow. Yeah, like it feels like such a surge of like, it feels really good. It's like such a surge of energy and like a nice flow to ideas that, at least to me, it made sense. I don't know if like looking on the outside to someone, if it would have made sense, but yeah, I think there is a connection to all that. But then I know I've struggled with wanting to go back to that hypomanic state, like not even just when I've been in the depressive episodes, but just like being at baseline and being more regulated and stabilized. Like, I still to this day, like, I miss that feeling of like not just being more creative, but being more sociable, feeling like more engaging, more interesting to people. Like, I can talk someone's ear off and just be the, I don't know, like the center of the room, which is not at all how I view myself. Like, I'm not necessarily so much a wallflower anymore, I would like to think, but I'm not someone who grabs or, you know, just wants to take that center of attention for myself in parties, groups, or whatnot. So I think it's, yeah, like something I wrestle with because, yeah, in terms of like that part about the candles and the mugs thing, like, That was part of my grandiosity, or like I felt like, oh, I need to do this in order to be considered like significant, special in the world, which also speaks to an insecurity that I still have at times, that I'm not worthy enough or that I'm not special enough. So the hypomania allowed me to tap into that or feel that way about myself. And so that's something I miss too, is just feeling like, yeah, that like claim to fame in some way, not in a grandiose way, but just wanting to be acknowledged and recognized for something.
You have talked a lot about growth, and it's a theme in your letter, and finding your voice also, that theme comes out. But you put a reminder in your letter to remember to set up your treatment team as you move. I was wondering, was that reminder to your current self as well?
Yeah, no, that's something I very much try to keep in mind for myself. You know, that I would have wanted to have been told back then, but then also to this day, especially as I am going to make a transition, another life transition, and I'm going to move cities again. And wanting to very much keep in mind for myself, like, do not let what happened like 4 years ago when I first moved to a new city, like, happen again. Like, I thought that I could handle it by myself, or that because I was taking my medications and I felt pretty good about myself after extensive therapy, like, I've got this, I can handle this. But it is, with the transition, there are going to be challenges, obviously, right? But then I was dealing with more than I could have possibly predicted at the time. And so, yeah, like, you know, I think I could not overstate the importance of setting up the right treatment team for myself, like for my past and current self, for sure.
You're finishing college. You have these new, you're experiencing bipolar for the first time, and you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life. So what inspired you to go on the path that you're currently on?
Yeah, as I touched on in my letter, I think being shown by the therapist and the psychiatrist that I had, both good and bad, right? Like being shown what is helpful, what is not helpful, what is invalidating, what is more supportive. Having that lived experience, I wanted to be able to carry that into the service that I wanted to ultimately provide to others. Like I always saw myself as being someone involved in healthcare. I didn't really know or realize for myself back then that mental health was very much an option and area that I could pursue. Like, I think just from messages being sent by parents and then growing up, like having, like at the time, like mental health not really being part of the conversation and not like that kind of career not being really talked about, at least in my family or in my, you know, broader community. I think as I got to really experience firsthand these services and how much they helped me in my mental health journey, you know, I was inspired and I wanted to help. It's kind of cliche to like go to the help, like to the motivation to want to help others. But, you know, I did feel like I wanted to also give greater representation in the mental health field as, again, an Asian American woman. Like, it does still stand that is very much a white dominated industry. A lot of, yes, women, you know, are very much in the mental health field, but I wanted to show to others out there who may look like me, who may have had similar experiences as me, to you know, see that it is possible and it is very much a valid line of work to go into for, has been typically or in, traditionally in the past been an underrepresented area for people in my community. And with that said, though, you know, as I've gone through the years in my doctoral program to become a clinical psychologist, I've been very mindful of not treading or blurring the line between, you know, me and my clients and not self-disclosing all these things about me, right? Like wanting to maintain that neutrality, that, you know, having the focus be ultimately on the client, right? Like that the person who is coming in for help. So, you know, as much as I want to keep in mind and tap into my lived experiences of being a recipient of mental health services, like I know that, you know, that's something as I go on in my professional career and in my training that I still want to be mindful of not crossing that line. And so, yeah, that's something that I've tried to, like, you know, for example, in the Young Adult Council on DBSA or like in other ways, like I have wanted to tap into that personal lived experience, like in other ways too.
Yeah. And I mean, we need more healthcare professionals who have been on both sides, right? So that's all about that peer voice and the peer experience and making sure that the needs of peers are being met. So I know you'll do great.
thank you.
So what do you want kids or teens or even young college students, what do you think they should know or should be learning about mental health or, you know, what should our education around mental health be?
There is some work being done in introducing like social emotional curriculum into schools now. Like, there is some greater focus being made on the importance of mental health in schools, or, you know, being discussed with youth and adolescents. Think that what would be helpful for this age group, or, you know, even young adults too, to be learning about is paying attention to not only the early signs, like we've talked about in other podcasts or, you know, blog posts about how to recognize the early signs of a mood disorder. So of course, being very aware about what those can look like, but then, so that takes like time and practice, right, to build that self-awareness, but then also being able to, like, it's easier said than done, but just like having some self-compassion to ourselves in acknowledging these symptoms, early signs, and then seeking the help for ourselves that we need in order to treat these symptoms. Like, I don't, like, you know, it's been a while since I've been in school, and I'm not sure, you know, what is being taught now necessarily, but I do think, you know, there can always be more discussions and more focus made on like the education, the self-awareness, and also the self-compassion that we can show in learning how to navigate these things in mental health.
Navigating those early symptoms. And yes, you contributed to those recognizing the first signs and that podcast. So very quickly here, what is a wellness tip or wellness practice that you do every day that you think other people should know more about or should be aware of?
This isn't something necessarily every day that I do, but paying attention or taking care of, like, you know, the mind-body connection has been helpful for me. So meaning that not only do I pay attention to my emotional and mental health, but then also how that is connected to my physical health, right? So getting massages is very much a huge wellness practice that I do for myself that allows me to like release tension, but also just get like more in touch with my body and like just bring that greater awareness to myself about like how am I feeling and how I can better take care of myself. But maybe something to better answer your question of like what I do practice every day, I guess, is just staying in touch and using my support network has been huge for me. Like in my partner, the close friends that I do have who know about my bipolar disorder and who support me in that, you know, I think that can't also be overstated enough, is having that, those people behind your back who you can talk to in a safe space and who will offer, you know, that support, because yeah, these things are difficult.
So having a built-in support group, that's a great wellness tip. Last thing, Lauren, what is something from this letter? What's the most important thing you want younger Lauren to take from the letter that you wrote to her?
I know that there's conversations out there where some people with bipolar disorder do feel like it's very much part of their identity, that it is intertwined and very intricately connected to who they are. And so that's their experience and their perspective. But I know for me personally, what I want my younger self to take away from this letter and continue to hold in mind is that this is not something, bipolar disorder is not something that defines me. And it's not something that I am limited by. I am very much more than someone who has bipolar disorder. I have many aspects of my identity that make me who I am. And this is only just one part of all that. And so I would want my younger self to just take part that as confusing, overwhelming, and how very much it does feel encompassing at that time, like that's not the only thing that makes me me. There's more to me than bipolar disorder.
Thank you to Lauren for sharing her story. You can visit us at dbsalliance.org/imlivingproof to read Lauren's letter. You can also submit a letter of your own and read letters from previous guests. The I'm Living Proof, A Letter to My Younger Self podcast is hosted by DBSA's Programs Manager, Hannah Zeller, and DBSA's Digital Communications Manager, Dante Freeman. If you like this episode, great. Let us know by rating and reviewing this podcast. You can support our mission to provide hope, help, support, and education to improve the lives of people living with mood disorders by going to dbsalliance.org/donate. Thank you.